Welcome to the Ice Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Nitta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's weird to record separately again after having finally
together. I know. This is why I have separation anxiety and like abandonment issues, is sometimes you spend a week with your friend in a hotel room in Germany and then you're no longer in a hotel room in Germany and it sucks.
Yeah, but we're doing our best. And I think it sucks, but we're doing our best is kind of the theme of today's episode.
Yeah.
Because as we start our official, like, retrospective Olympics coverage, we wanted to, I think, just get all of the bitching and complaining out of the way in an episode about
bitching and complaining.
Yeah, like all the stuff about it that sucked, all of the shitty discourse, all the things that made us mad. And then next episode, we're going to talk about all of the wonderful things. And that way, when we talk about like Kaori Sakamoto, we're not like also bitching out the other side of our mouth about Russia. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So we're splitting this, you know, you've seen a split events into like short program and free skate or by gender or by podium and honorable mentions. We're not doing any of this. We're doing the bitching episode and the celebration episode.
Yeah, we're doing it by vibes.
We're doing it by vibes and vibes alone. This is where we're at coming out of the 2022 Beijing Olympics.
First of all, I never watched the closing ceremony, so I don't. No one can really prove to me that it ended.
Yeah, I haven't seen the closing ceremony either. I've seen like pictures from it, but unfortunately by the time it happened, I was back to my real life.
Yeah, it was always my impression that the closing ceremony was like, what if we took all of the campiness out of the opening ceremony and it was just like people giving speeches in broad daylight?
But then like people get to walk around a bunch. It's basically like graduation.
Oh yeah, I can see that. You've graduated from the Olympics.
The thing is, I'm a sucker for a graduation ceremony. If anyone's graduating, I'll be there, but I wasn't for the Olympics. So maybe it's still going on. Who knows?
So, okay, we're like beating around the bush. I feel like we need to rip the Band-Aid off and talk about the Russian doping thing.
Give me a list of content warnings before we do that.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about the Russian doping controversy, which involves the drugging of a minor, and so like child abuse, disordered eating, systemic abuse and of like power in children, and people just going through really rough emotional journeys. And then later in this episode, we may also touch on issues of like homophobia. So honestly, if you want to have like a really super good time, like just wait till the next one.
I'm not laughing because any of this is a laughing matter. I'm just, this is a comedy podcast that we started years ago because we wanted to make jokes. And we're here now at a list of content warnings so we can talk about what happened in the Olympics. But this is our responsibility as fans and people who still appreciate the sport for some insane reason.
We find ourselves in a weird position of like, we don't actually really want to talk about this stuff. And we've sort of been on a boycott of like discussing how the Russian Atari skaters did in competition because we didn't want to like dignify it by elevating it to the level of like fairer sport, I guess. But I don't know. It's kind of come to our attention that like people, at least some people, listen to what we say. And so we should say something about it because it happened. And that's the only thing anybody wants to talk about with us now, just as the figure skating nerds in people's lives. They're like, how about that?
I have not gone back to practice since I came back from Germany. And part of it has been scheduling stuff. And part of it has been, I fucking dread the conversations I'm about to have at my rink with older coaches who are very much like fans of Russian coaching, and with kids who I know look up to those skaters. And I know all of those people are going to be the people who want to talk to me about events. And I just haven't had it in me just yet. Anyway, this is not about me. I just wanted to share that. It's like I've been thinking about like the ripple effects of people in our lives know that we care. And I think one of them is that we're here. That's why we're here.
Yeah, well, and I think that's probably relatable for the listeners, because if you're listening, you probably are like a figure skating nerd and you fucking nerd. And your family and friends or mutuals or whoever are probably like, hey, I just started watching skating and this is my first impression of it. Oh, and you have God. All this pressure on you to like defend the sport, but also be honest about the sport and also be like, I love the sport and here's why, but also it sucks and here's why. And it ends up being a lot of pressure to explain to everyone in your life things about the sport that are coming out, like their first impression of figure skating on the biggest scale possible is like the worst possible thing. And that's yeah. both accurate and inaccurate in different ways.
Yeah. So we're going to do all of that. If you're here, you don't need like the timeline of events or like, here's what happened on Christmas and here's why we didn't know until February. All of that is on the internet and has been compiled by people who are actual journalists and smarter than us. So I think we're just going to talk about the emotional side of things and like emotionally intelligent side of things. Like, how do we feel about it? What we do moving forward? Why does this matter? Why? How have we come to arrive here, etc.?
The thing that makes the most sense to me is that like we are a fan podcast, both in that we are fans and that we are making a podcast for fans. And like, sometimes we're really lucky and we get to like go to events or talk to famous skaters, but like at the end of the day, we're fans. And so I'm sort of the most interested in the effect this has had on like the fandom and the conversations that it has brought up among fans.
Yeah, I will do a vanity thing before we do anything else. I'm not here to celebrate us or the way we've approached things in the past several seasons. And I hate that all of this is happening. I hate that we're seeing children's health, safety, mental health, just appearance in the public eye and respect that they have by journalists and onlookers and just random people jeopardized. I hate all of that. And I'm not happy that we've arrived here, but I'm grateful that people have kind of woken up to conversations that small corners of our circles have been trying to have for many, 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 many years. And it kind of has sucked to like see people digging up old information about like previous skaters. And here's this list of people who retired at 17 and stuff like that, as if it's new information. So for just like a tiny second of like vanity for us and for like our sanity that we haven't been fucking screaming into a void for years, I just want to say, have we not been fucking telling y'all?
Yeah, part of the reason it felt so surreal when all of this was coming out, aside from the fact that I was jet lagged and we were sleeping at weird hours in a hotel room in a foreign country and like surviving on M&Ms and Haribos, I think part of it was also just this insane feeling of like, finally people are fucking, I don't want to say listening because they're not listening to us, but like it's interesting. Like I was having this conversation with a family friend the other night about, oh, well, people must be finally listening to you. And I'm like, no, they're not. Like, we don't have the reach. We don't have the audience. Like, anything that is happening right now is not because of us, but it's still kind of vindicating to know that we never.
I'm gonna call names. It feels good to not have to do what Johnny Weir is doing, which is pretend that we've always cared and known. Because we weren't, you know, gallivanting around fucking Sample 70 making a fucking, like, NBC special about it. And then having to be like, well, I'm going to be silent for 4 minutes now. So this is a statement. Feels fucking good. And we're not the only ones by fucking long shot. And there's people whose voices are way more important who are in the same corner. But it feels good to not have to backtrack and to know that with integrity, we've been like trying to tell people for a very long time, as little as we knew.
Yeah, well, and it kind of reminds me of like in a very petty way, like if you've ever had like an ex or even like an ex friend who you're like telling everybody like this person sucks and everyone's like, well, we're going to remain neutral because we don't want to take sides. And then a few years later, after having just dealt excessively with that person, everyone in your life is like, no, you were right. They suck.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that. And I only laugh because it's, you know, we've it's been relatable. Trying. It's relatable. in many contexts.
And in both cases, you're not happy that someone sucks and is mistreating other people, but it does sort of feel like vindicating to know that you're not making up the shitty treatment. Anyway, I think that I have regrets when I look back at the way we've spoken about Atari and Sambo and all of those girls throughout the history of this podcast, only because I was always trying so hard to never be like excessively negative or down on anybody. And as a result, I think I oftentimes like gave them too much of the benefit of the doubt. And I tried so hard to like what they were doing because it just seemed like everyone else did. And in retrospect, I just kind of, you know, hindsight is 2020. I'm like, nah, girl, you were right. It's not good.
And while we're confessing our regrets, I don't share that because I've mostly been quiet just because I never got it. Like,
yeah, you were never really doing that as much as I was.
I just didn't give a shit enough. My one regret is very recent, and I almost went back and deleted everything I said, but I'm trying to be a better person. And my one regret is being mean about a child having a trauma response on live television. I was mean about Alexandra Trusova's low outburst, and that was because I too was having a bit of a trauma response to the whole thing. And I went back and read through my tweets, and I was like, if someone took this out of context, I sound like a real bitch. But realistically, man, I would like to think that we're all allowed 5 minutes of feeling fucking insane for having witnessed just like a complete breakdown of just everything on live television. I don't know. I'm not justifying the way I responded. I just wanted to own up to it and have this little audio to point to if anyone ever came back to call me out on it, you know?
Well, yeah, but I also think it's interesting. I didn't know that you were gonna do that. I kind of thought we were gonna like talk about Sasha from two different perspectives, and I really genuinely think like both are valid at the end of the day, because I was thinking about this in the car on the way home from buying myself my daily 700 vitamin waters at the store. Because you see I am an athlete who does not do drugs. I just do vitamin waters, and by athlete I mean I sit on the couch. And I was gonna say that I think, like, look, raise your hand if you had to talk about Russia and this whole thing with your therapist this week, because I sure did. I think that what we kind of landed on was not like there is one morally objective high ground from which to view the experience of watching a teenager have a mental breakdown over winning a silver medal. It's actually just, like you said, like bringing out trauma in everyone watching the trauma. And so I think, like, yeah, we should extend grace to an abuse victim who we don't know anything about her life and she's having a hard time. But I also don't think that it's fair to say that, like, any other responses, knee-jerk or otherwise, that you have are bad, because, like, you could be viewing it from the place of, like, I was the Anna in that situation growing up, and regardless of whether it was intentional or regardless of what were the reasons, like, Sasha's in my life made me feel bad in ways that harmed me. So, like, ultimately, the tragedy is just that the whole thing is just people hurting people.
Yeah.
And that's okay to feel hurt about that in, like, whatever way.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, she's 17. And as a person who, like, had emotional issues growing up, I could see myself throwing a tantrum in public over less at 17 or 32.
I have been humbled a lot by people on the internet being very aggressive about the way some people interpreted seeing this at first. But I don't know, man. I feel like two things can be true at the same time as well for a person.
Super true. Like, I don't think anybody on earth would argue that that response was good sportsmanship. Like, I don't think even the biggest Sasha stands on earth, I don't think they could say, like, yeah, she should have behaved that way. Like, they can say, I understand why and I forgive her. Yeah. But nobody's like, yeah, that's how you do it. That's what I want to show my kids.
For better or worse, those girls, all of them, are being told for years and years that they're, like, stars. There is, you know, and that's part of the abuse. And that's part of why the response is like this. But, you know, there's the level of, like, stardom and celebrity that needs to be kind of talked about as well, because it's not just, it's part of what contributed to this entire thing is, you know, when you're getting the brand deals and the TV appearances and the glamour of it all at a very young age and, like, all the promises that comes with. I am deeply compassionate with all of those kids and like the way their lives are. But also that can create a bit of a diva in so many kids.
Oh my God, of course. Like even in adults it would, let alone kids who don't know any better. And I think this is actually something I thought about a lot. I watched the series about Charlie and Dixie D'Amelio like last summer when it came out. And because I'm really fascinated by sort of like kids and teenagers and young adults who are like really, really famous on social media from a young age, because as like a grown ass adult who's now getting like a slight more bit of attention on social media and stuff than I used to just because of the podcast, I feel like I would go fucking insane if I was a kid and I was famous, like just full stop. So I was thinking about the big takeaway that I got from that is that if you don't have a normal life as a kid, your normal sources of validation and self-esteem, like friendships and getting good grades at a regular school and like engaging in hobbies in a moderated way. Yeah. Like you don't have any of those. And so you're driving your self-esteem from these like brand deals, like you said, from getting a bajillion Instagram likes, from getting a bajillion medals. And I think it's like exactly what you said with the like being told you're a star over and over, and also like the bad conditions that we've heard hinted about. And I've pieced together this puzzle of like two shrimp, no rest, you know, all these awful things. I have to imagine you tell yourself it's all worth it because this is what athletes suffer through in order to win gold. And if you suffer through it all and you don't win gold, I can see that fucking breaking you.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it and it fucking sucks, but I don't know, man. As a former child actor, it brought me back to like those audition rooms where you walk in and there is like this one girl who like kind of looks like you and you know she's probably gonna book it. And it's just, it's a weird fucking way to be a child, because when you're little and you're like whatever your equivalent of booking the gig is, it feels important. You see many kids trying to be what you're being, and that makes you feel fucking special regardless of like the disappointments and the no's and the things. And I can understand being both obviously terribly the victim in this situation and also a bit of a bully to the other girl or like to the other whomstever. Like, I know I've booked the fucking part and been like, fuck yeah, this bitch's not getting it. And that kind of stays with you. Like, being a grown-up helps, and knowing that there is more also helps. But I don't know. It just brought up, like, a bunch of those memories to me personally.
Yeah, well, it brought up a lot of memories for me too, and I was never professionally a child actor at all. I just get mad when adults like use children in their machinations. Yeah. And the kids' dreams get, you know, I think another thing I was talking with my therapist about, and I wonder if she knows to what degree I quote her on this show, maybe I should stop, but the idea of like sometimes people can be doing their very best and still really hurt other people and like can regret that their best was still hurtful, but like not have been able to do any better at the time. Yeah. And I genuinely see that with like those girls. And I think that I don't think it's fair to expect them to have done any differently or any better. I think that it's on the adults who were not doing their best.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I don't know. I have thought theater to children, and I train with like kids and teenagers at my rank, and I work with children and teenagers. Like, I see those age groups and the way they place value on friendships and things that you share and all of that, even without the glamour and importance of like being a world famous anything. And kids can be terribly mean to each other and terribly unfair to each other when they're trying their absolute best all the time. And I think it comes back to this conversation I feel like we've had so many times about how when you're younger, regardless of context, everything is happening to you for the first time.
I was literally just going to say that. You read my mind.
And when things are happening to you for the first time, everything feels so fucking important. Whether it is getting a medal at the Olympics, or she got a better grade at this test than me, or she got this part in the Spring Musical, or like whatever it may be. Things are just so intensely important all the time when you're a teenager, regardless. So I can and I hate to imagine what that must be like.
Yeah, and part of the reason that happens with teenagers is because you're right. It's the first time everything is happening. And part of the reason is because of hormones. And as we know, like, hormones can be changed by performance-enhancing drugs. So,
hey, let's talk about drugs. Let's talk about drugs, because the nuance of children and their emotions, I mean, there's only so much we can say. Obviously, we're trying to be as compassionate and
we're not kind child psychologists.
Possible, but like, yeah, we don't know shit about shit. I mean, we kind of do because we've both worked with children and we know how to like teach children, but we're not psychologists by any stretch of the imagination. However, here's a statement that I'm perfectly comfortable making, and I do not need preamble, and you can take this out of context and use my voice. Don't give fucking drugs to fucking children. It's always bad. There is no context in which giving drugs to kids when the kids are healthy and don't need said drugs can be good. The end.
Yeah, there is so very much wrong with it. I don't even know where to begin. Like, it's like every day.
Drugging kids is bad.
Well, and I want to be really, this is like a new angle that has just jumped out for it just now. So rest assured, you can always find new beautiful things to hate about this situation, no matter how far out you are. Is that
I'm laughing because I'm manic about this. I'm so sorry. Oh, totally. Sorry.
No. Any laughter you hear today is manic and angry. Just disclaimer. So like one of my personal soapboxes is that I actually like my hackles kind of raise when I hear people say don't give drugs to kids, because I was put on antidepressants when I was 9 and it saved my life. And it was the best decision my parents and myself and everybody could have done. And so I get really upset whenever people are like, don't give psychotropic drugs to kids, or don't give drugs to kids. Like that whole narrative of like children should never be given medicine because it's somehow like immoral to do so. Like that bothers me. And it's shit like this of like giving fucking old people angina medication to a healthy child that makes giving like some Zoloft to a kid with severe OCD look really bad. You know what I mean? Like that's one other small way to be mad about this.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal though. Giving puberty blockers to like a trans child can be life-saving and life-affirming and can change their life. Giving chemotherapy to a 5-year-old with cancer is life-saving. Giving an athlete who is very clearly very physically fit medication for people on their deathbeds who are like 80 years old is fucked up and illegal and bad. And those are very different fucking things. I'm sorry, exactly. I'm clapping into my microphone.
No, I'm just saying like it makes me mad when anybody like muddies the water with that, like giving haters something to point to of like, well,
and I know like none of our listeners are those kinds of people, but Lord knows there's people on the internet and there's people in the circles of figure skating who don't like nuance. So let's make it abundantly fucking clear. Those are different things.
That's why it makes me so mad, because we're literally in the middle of like political battles right now over whether it's like therapeutic or like quote-unquote abuse to give kids puberty blockers when they're trans. And like now we have to deal with the other complication of like, well, what about when you give kids puberty blockers when they're trying to land a quintuple Lutz? And it's like, shut the fuck up, they're different.
They're so wildly different. And for my money, there is just so many things to actually be mad about in this fucking world. And so many of them are about endangering children in so many different ways. And you can be mad about all of it. And you can pay attention to all of it and be loud about all of it. But don't fucking say it's the same fucking thing. It's so wildly different.
I just made up some guys and got mad at them and it's fine, but...
No, because they are the same guys is the thing. Because if we want to bring in, like, puberty blockers and, like, all of that conversation into it, Lord knows there's going to be people who bring in, like, trans athletes into this and, like, what happens then.
Athletes.
And, like, trans kid athletes. And what if, like, a fucking, like, trans girl lands a quad and does that count? Like, I know those people exist and I wish all of them would fucking choke.
Yeah, so that's...
So that's a fun, good comedy podcast I'm making.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Haha.
I just downed the rest of my water as if it's a shot. I'm doing great.
Well, hydration is important when you're angry. So,
God, let people drink water. Sidebar.
Yeah, let people drink water at the Olympics, after or before the Olympics, too. All the time, everyone deserves water.
Hydration is so good.
As a basic human right, as somebody who used to work at, like, a world human rights nonprofit, I can assure you that water is for everyone.
And also, so few people in the world have access to it in its clean state. Yeah, can you tell I'm just firing an old cylinder, just thinking about all the ways in which capitalism and adults have failed the world?
Okay, so here's what I want to say.
Help.
Because this is the part of this that's fucking insane to me to this day. Everything else about this, all the other angles, the tragedy of it, the absurdity of it, I feel like I've processed it at least via Twitter and whatever, talking to you. The thing about it that is still fucking bananas to me is that there is a significant portion of what seem to me to be like otherwise mentally sound people who have normal opinions who really truly believe that this is just Kamila and that the other girls are like totally, totally like normal athletes who are treated normal and given no drugs and no weird treatment and have these like happy, fluffy lives. And it's just Kamila. Like, are you fucking stupid?
That's all I have to say on the matter is, are you fucking stupid? And also, can
you not? Drug test, but they tested negative for drugs. Yeah, so did fucking Kamila, like, a lot. They're very smart. They know how long drugs stay in your system. Like, it's not hard to cheat a drug test if you're fucking Russia and you have a lot of practice, dude. Like,
also, like, half of their fucking... I'm sorry, they're not Russia. They're the Russian Olympic Committee. Remember when that was a thing? Remember
They're
already fucking banned?
I'm sorry, I said Russia. I shouldn't have said Russia because that makes them... that gives them permission to do it. And nothing else in the past 2 weeks has given them permission to do it, so...
Yeah, no, it's fucking insane. The fact that it's the fucking, like, Russian agency, that it's like, nah, it's fine. The fact that... Y'all know how every single institution has failed everyone along, like, every single step of this. I'm not gonna rehash any of that because we know. What I wanted to say is, if you're listening to this, if you've gotten this far into it, it means you have some access to the internet and some access to some form of literacy and social media. And I'm not disrespecting people who don't, but you do. And if you're here and you think it's just her, can you not fucking read?
Yeah, like, remember when Shabatova was, like, 13 and she, like, said that they're all drinking dope and then she became, like, completely excommunicated from Russia and the Russian figure skating system and now she skates for the Ukraine and then she came in last at the Olympics? Like, remember that?
Remember that? Remember how that just, like, happened to happen? Also,
remember how Anna Shcherbakova, the Olympic gold medalist and the current reigning world champion, had meal replacement powder in her room during a race on Instagram Live, like, during the Olympics?
God, it's stupid. It's insane. Also, I feel fully comfortable saying this because I know those people don't listen. And I know that if you do listen, you might care to hear it. Like I've mentioned before, there is many, like, quote unquote, Russian school coaches that I know and have spoken to at my rank, which, you know, is training an Olympian and, you know, works with a lot of kids. And it's a fucking open secret. It's been an open secret for years that the Russians, capital R, Russians, do this kind of shit to their athletes. And it's conversely not just them, and it's not just Sambo and blah, 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 blah. We all know where we stand on that, but this is not news to people who, like, train athletes, to people who are in, like, the Eastern European corner of this shit and do their camps and all of that. This is not news.
Yeah, and even so, like, there have been little new bits of information to me anyway that I didn't know about that have come out in the past couple weeks that really stuck with me. And, like, I assume that they're, you know, at least vetted a little bit, but, like, you know, don't at me if they're not. I think they come from sources that I trust, but, you know, do your homework. where, you know, there was like that French guy who was like, oh yeah, everybody knows it's an open secret. He's like a coach or something. And there was like that like open secret rumor of like a girl who had to quote unquote get her kidneys cleaned at like that one Worlds a few years ago. And it really is like very openly, clearly Kosternaya. And like, then there's the whole thing of like, oh, well, is that the reason that she doesn't have quads? It's because she, her body couldn't handle the drugs and like, la, 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 la. Like, it's at a point where I feel in general, like I don't want a tin hat about things, but everything I've tin-hatted about up to this point that I was, like, conservative about has been so, so, so much more mild than reality that at this point I'm like, what is fucking happening? Like, maybe I have a wrong perception of what could actually happen in the world.
Yeah, I feel like whenever, and I'm sorry, I'm about to go into, like, detail about weight and body image things for just a second. I feel like the way it's been spoken about, like, in my presence at least, is, like, barely an insider at my rank in the past has been like, oh yeah, they do like things and stuff, wink wink, and they make it sound like, or people had this impression of like, I don't know, like diet pills or like stuff that makes you shit more, like any of that. I don't think anyone, I feel like there's this like vague idea of how you could dope someone to make it work for an aesthetic sport, and then there's the reality, which is like, oh no, we're giving them heart medication for like deathly ill people. And I feel like that's what's coming into light, is like the gruesome reality of how much, and I'm not saying that like diet pills are fine, but like the reality of like how much fucking worse to like the body of a healthy child all of this can be.
Yeah, well, it's because it's further down the rabbit hole of like the woman who ate the spider, who ate the fly, who ate the, you know, whatever, because there was that whole article that came out too, which I believe was just speculative, but like did kind of make a lot of sense to me. And like, I would be curious to hear other people opine on it. But like the idea of like when your body is malnourished, such as when you are anorexic or it's being forced on you because you're like starved by your coaches or whatever, regardless, when your body doesn't have enough fuel, your body goes into starvation mode, and part of that is like your heart starts working differently to keep you alive. Yeah. And as a result, you don't have the stamina because you're like weak and kind of dying. And so then the heart pill is to keep your stamina up given that. So it's like treating a thing that they're causing, which is like, I mean, not that it wouldn't be fucked up even if it was diet pills, like you said, but it's like they're just doing cover-ups on cover-ups on cover-ups and just abusing kids so they can keep abusing them in different ways.
Yeah, and it just creates this just genetically engineered human children who their bodies were never meant to work this way in so many fucking ways. And I think, like, I keep coming back to, like, all the ways in which we're not saying anything new, and people whose voices are more important have said all of this so much, which has been devastating but also amazing to see in the past couple of weeks. But I keep, like, thinking about Gracie Gold's piece that she wrote, where she said a lot of, like, very good, smart, kind, thoughtful things, and you should go read it. But the one sentiment that stuck with me was like, why would we even want to be competitive with this skull, with this like movement of the sport, if this is the price it comes with? This is, first of all, it's not viable for anyone because it's not physically achievable without the means of like the cycle of destroying a body in so many ways. And secondly, why would you even want to be in the same playing field with that when everyone knows how that's achieved, you know?
Yeah, well, and it's like very clearly not the same playing field. And that's kind of what we've been trying to articulate so much in the past several years, is that it feels like you're watching one sport on two different playing fields, and you have to kind of mentally do all this 4D chess to square the fact that you just have to kind of ignore this part and ignore that part and watch this part because it makes you happy and figure out how to watch it.
We're doing that right now. We're spending 40 minutes talking about all of this so that next week we can sit down and be like, oh my god, here's all of those people who are so beautiful and joyful, and we're doing double axels and triple double combos, and we felt things for it.
Yeah, like, and like
it goes so deep that we can't avoid it at this point.
It does. I want to say that I too was surprised that it was like literally doping, literally performance enhancing drugs. Although there's arguments of like, oh, having better stamina doesn't increase your. Shut the fuck up. Like, of course it does. As somebody who used to get out of breath like running 2 feet in gym class, you're gonna try and tell me that having better stamina it doesn't make you a better athlete? Shut up. And like, I personally thought that it was bad enough for all of this level of outcry to be happening before we knew there were drugs. Like, it's insane to me that, like, the two shrimp thing and the Yulia Lipnitskaya thing and the Zhenya Medvedeva thing and just all of it. Like, it's very surprising to me that there was not this general reaction among more people about that kind of abuse. And it's like, we as a society are so into like weight loss and like stuff like that, that it's like it was easier to justify. But for me, it doesn't feel like that much worse to like be giving drugs to a kid than to be like withholding food and affection and a normal life, you know?
Yeah. But the thing is, and I feel like we kind of talked about this in our primer episode where we're like bracing ourselves for Lord knows what, and it ended up being so much worse in so many ways. But there's this thing which comes with aesthetic sports and classic performance art like ballet or whatever, where it is so deeply ingrained in the aesthetic of it and the culture of it that, you know, there will be blood in your point shoes and you're gonna, I, Tanya, cry while you're doing your makeup and then go out and do a triple axel. Like, it's so part of like the fetish of here's like all the pain we would stand to like achieve this like level of beautiful artful performance, where, you know, oh, this girl's anorexic or oh, this girl's back hurts is like a part of the glamour for some fucked up reason for so many people.
Yeah, well, there's no standard definition of what the capital P pain is across the board. And I think this is actually sort of an issue just in general in life of like people having totally different thresholds of like what's hard work to the point of breaking. And so they just have no idea how hard they're supposed to work. But like, especially clear cut, like as you're saying, in athletics and in aesthetic sports of like, you can say you have to suffer, and like one person's suffering could be I twisted my ankle and I have to lay in bed for a couple of weeks, and one person's suffering could be like straight up getting abused by a coach, and no one is at any point being like, how do you scale those? Are those the same? No.
Yeah, I think in a lot of like circles of athletes and creators and artists, this conversation is very slowly starting to shift. Even like, I am not experienced as an athlete to speak about that, but I've been thinking about a lot of theater companies are moving away from the idea of the 10 out of 12, which for those of you who don't know is when you block a play to make it look pretty for 10 hours with very little union breaks, because it's part of how a play is made. You know, when you're blocking and teching a play, you have hell week, and it's when you're very tired and working for many, many hours, because that's how we make art. And a lot of theater companies in the past like year or two have been actively being like, we're not doing this anymore. We can achieve the same level of gorgeous, meaningful, important, funny, whatever art without doing that to ourselves and each other. And I think a similar conversation is happening in sports, and a similar conversation I've seen from like fucking being on TikTok is happening in like ballet and like classical dance circles. But it's one of those things where a lot of old school people with old school understanding are in charge in high places. And all of them have to be either fucking destroyed or die out for things to change in a meaningful way.
You just reminded me of how I like literally got in trouble in grad school when I was directing like a main stage show, because I used to let my actors go like 20, 30 minutes early from rehearsal if we finished everything we wanted to do that day. And I got in trouble with like the staff because they were like, you're not using your time effectively, like do not care enough. And I was like, no, I care about my actors' well-being. They did exactly what I wanted them to do the first couple of times. And now they're tired and they're 18 and they have homework. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. The thing is, I'm advocating for this so fucking hard, but at the same time, I'm already an old person and I already cherish my manic, being very tired, smoking many cigarettes in front of a rehearsal room, powering through kind of part of making things that I'm like, well, but yeah. And then I catch myself and I'm like, you don't need this in order to be making things. I understand the like glorifying. My God, I'm currently powering through hour like 14 of my day because I like making shit. Things don't need to be painful to be pretty. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I wanted to say a couple more random things about this. I wanted to say that I saw, making the rounds today on Twitter, a photo of Sasha and Anna and like one of the gremlin men in their lives, I forget who, and everyone was like, oh my God, Anna's such an angel because she put her gold medal in her pocket so Sasha wouldn't feel bad, which there's a lot going on here, a lot of assumptions here. Do we know that's why she did that? Where is her gold medal? Do we know why she's not wearing it? Like, was it heavy and she weighs 4 pounds and has probably osteoporosis? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of reasons. And even if it was because she felt bad for her friend, that's fucking terrible. You're gonna teach a teenage girl to like hide her light under a bushel because her friend was mean about it? That's a terrible lesson. I was always told, like, even if you get something your friend wants or vice versa, like, no one should have to downplay their achievements. Like, you can say, I worked hard for it and I'm proud, but like, it's insulting to downplay it in front of people who wanted it.
Yeah, because then it's both like, oh, well, I got it, but like, also, you were so not good enough that you couldn't get this thing that's not even that fucking important. It's fucked up in many, many, many ways.
Yeah, like, if we're teaching adolescent girls that sparing other people's feelings is more important than their own achievements at the level of the literal fucking gold medal at the Olympics, then what the fuck hope is there for, like, a kid who got an A on the spelling test?
And there it is. Yeah. We should be teaching children to celebrate each other because that builds better communities and it builds better teams of people who can make things with each other and like celebrate each other. And that shouldn't be hard.
Yeah, well, one doesn't get the feeling that anybody is really sitting around and being like, what values can we teach the Sambo girls?
Yeah, God, I wish someone would. Which reminds me, I'm slowly moving away from this whole fucking mess. The conclusion is, for me personally, several things. First of all, the children are fucking victims and none of them should be judged for anything. Also, I am so deeply pro-abolition when it comes to prisons as a concept in the world, but put fucking a Terry in a deep, dark cell for the rest of her life. It doesn't need to be a prison by definition. Just, like, put her away.
I'm pro-abolition when it comes to Sambo 70.
Yeah.
I here's what I want to say before we move on. I have theories and I have some potentially unpopular opinions that I need to just get out very quickly.
Go for it.
Okay.
50 minutes into this, let's say something controversial.
Okay, here's my controversial opinion, is I see everybody like, oh no, Sasha and Kami are like, oh, I never want to skate again, I want to retire, and don't do that, you're so good. I'm like, retire now, get the fuck out, retire yesterday. Yeah. Girl, get the fuck out. If I ever see either of them on an ice rink again, I will cry. Like, please God, I don't care how talented you are, you're a child and you have the rest of your life to live, and if you can get away from abuse, I don't care. Like, I also am so over, like, I don't know, everybody deals with it differently, and I don't think it's objectively bad to still be, like, posting fan cams of them and stuff, because I think some people feel like, oh, well, we need to still be celebrating the girls, and I'm like, there is no the girls. There has never been just the girls. It's not just them and their achievements, and it never has been, and it sucks. I wish it was, but, like, there is no fan cam you can post of, like, Kamila Valieva or Sasha Trusova or Anna Shcherbakova or whoever that is not now tainted with, she has been abused, she has potentially been drugged, this whole system is fucked up, and, like, the best way you can support her is by, like, praying that she gets to go home and live a normal life. And people are like, oh, well, we can't ruin the careers of these things. I'm like, honestly, if you need to quote unquote ruin, aka end at 17, the career of like a dozen little girls in Russia and send them home right now in order to end this cycle, I am fucking pro that.
They'll find something fucking else to do.
It's just not that important to me that, like, I don't care how talented you are. I would rather see you live a very mediocre life than be abused and taken advantage of, regardless of whether that means that, like, oh no, you're amazing career. Like, I don't care. I'd rather see like 24 or 50 or whatever young Russian girls have a slightly less incredible life than have the trauma for the rest of their lives. And also all the girls will come after them because it never got stopped.
Yeah, that's it. Also, regardless of how special and beautiful and awesome our sport is, at its very core, at its just what it should be like and what it looks like and what it is by definition, none of us as skating fans, as coaches, as athletes, none of us are performing heart surgery. No one's saving lives. No one's ruining any careers. Like, no, the world is not being deprived if 17 little Russian girls don't skate anymore. I would much rather see so many mediocre double-doubles and terrible Beelmans that are not stretched all the way up or whatever if the price it comes with is fucking no child suffers again. Like, if you watch footage from the Olympics from, like, the 20s, like, dawn of the camera, like, very, very early days, it's a bunch of people in their late 20s wearing fucking maxi skirts and doing figures. And I would much rather see Mariah Bell in 15 years at fucking 40 doing that than know that a fucking child has, you know, been fed a single shrimp in order to achieve a perfect high spin. I don't care about the perfect high spin.
Here's the other quick thing I want to say. having said that, I have now looked back and realized that what I previously thought were all horseshit tin hat theories have now been proven to be the absolute mildest version of the actual truth. Here are some things I would like to put forward that I think might be happening.
God.
One, I don't think this is a stretch. I think that Kamila losing was not an accident. Like, I don't know the degree to which a skater is literally able to, like, do a bad job on purpose because they were paid or told to. Like, I don't know what goes into that physically. I don't know how specifically it was carried out, whether it was judging or whether, you know, whatever. But, like, I do think a deal was made so that Kamila would finish off the podium.
Makes burying all of this so much easier.
It does, because now it's like, oh, well, she didn't win, so it's fine. Who cares? Whatever. It's not unfair. And, like, also, we get to have a medal ceremony. Nobody got to, you know, whatever. Okay, so then she's hurried away on a plane with Evgenia Medvedeva, who, like, God bless her for being such a nice little, like, big sister to them. And Alina, I guess. I didn't hear anything specific she did, but the two of them seem to be very supportive.
I have things to say about that, and I'll get there.
I think that part of the reason that Sasha was so upset was because I believe that she was told that as part of this deal where Kami finishes off podium, she would win. And that was, like, part of it. Like, that was part of her rider, and that it didn't end up working out that way. And that, for me, explains why she was screaming, like, you knew. And, like, first of all, I'm sorry, but her calling Ateria a cunt on TV is the funniest fucking thing that's ever happened to me. Like, play that on a repeat at my funeral, to be honest. Like, I'm gonna walk down the aisle to just that clip, like, remixed a little bit with some violins.
That's a lot of what Russian rap is like, actually, is like orchestral and then someone just saying fuck in Russian.
Good. I love that. Yeah. So I think that that's part of what that was. I think that it's one thing to say, like, I believed five quads would get me a gold medal, but also it hasn't yet. So why did you think it would now? Is it maybe that someone told you? She was saying to them, you knew. What did they know? That's what I want to know. I would also like to know if potentially the reason that they all have fucking insane long knee-length cult hair is because maybe having hair clippings of kids on drugs lying around free for the testing is maybe a bad idea for Sambo.
I'm obsessed with this theory about the hair that you have for two reasons. First of all, I feel like having a lot of hair gives you more places for the drugs to go, which is me just proving that I don't know biology.
No, also, I literally thought that too. Like, what if it's diluting it? Like, what if you have a bajillion hairs, what if one hair is less likely to have more drugs in it? Like,
but also both of you to fucking assume that anyone in any hair salon in Russia would care enough. They're still fucking celebrities back there. Like, there is I don't think anyone back home for them would care enough to go to the hair salon, you know, when they're with their newspaper and their trench coats to collect.
But
the
if I'm an investigative journalist or I work for like WADA or something, it's going to be easier for me to go through the trash than it is for me to like get into Sasha Trusova's room and like pick a hair out of her hairbrush is all I'm saying. I don't know what WADA does. I imagine it's very like Inspector Gadget sleuthing Tintin type shit, I guess.
It's fully a Tamaki Hiwatashi program, but they're collecting hair samples.
It's Detective Keiji.
It's every single Sherlock collecting hair samples. I want to say two things. First of all, I thought it was so fucking ugly how they used Alina and Zhenya and fucking Morisik Vitalashvili, who forgot that he's not Russian for all of this. I think it's so fucking ugly the way they were put in there with the rest of the cronies to be like screaming and cheering so that to like a basic onlooker things would look fine. I thought that was disgusting, and I understand Zhenya and Alina in particular are also long-term victims of this entire system, but at some point you're old enough, and in both of their cases, you've already spoken out a bunch. You don't need to be submitting yourselves to this at this point. Neither one of them was sent there with this team. They were both there as journalists. They didn't need to be doing any of this, and this could have been played much better, and it pissed me off and it upset me, especially in the case of Zhenya, who like so infamously like got away. It fucking sucked to see. Also, my other thing is while we've been having this conversation, I've decided the only way in which I ever want to see any of those girls skate or compete again or anything. Actually, not compete, just skate. I think all of them should retire as soon as possible, get so fucking far away from all of this, just disappear into the Alps somewhere, and then 10 years from now fucking show up with like a banger ice show. And be like, I still got it. I'm a fully grown adult. And here's how I'm like good at this. And I'm not even saying, oh my God, they should open an ice school and like help other kids. Like, no, no, they don't owe that to anyone. I just think they should have a nice long life and then just do fucking singles for cash in 10 years.
I just want them to do whatever they want to do, man. And, like, yeah. If that's skate, like, I hope they get to skate in that capacity. I think, like, jumping back for a second, like, I guess my impression of the Evgenia thing was that, like, I mean, maybe I just stan her and so I'm being defensive, which is, like, entirely true. Like, I think she is probably capable of gross shit, just like every other human. But I got the impression that she saw herself as like, I have to be here for these kids because I'm the only person that's going to be here for them and not for like money or glory or whatever. And so I think she saw her, I don't know, I got the feeling that she and Alina and like all of them were like trying to be supportive emotionally for the girls, which like I guess in the moment makes sense. And then if you zoom out as like, are you supporting the girls by supporting the system? Like, not really, but I don't know what it's like to be inside that, so whatever. But like what I found really interesting was that all of the Russian girls, including like Lisa, including like, you know, just like any older Russian female skater on Instagram, all of their posts directed to all of the Sambo girls who are currently competitive included some phrase to the effect of like, you already know, we've already talked about it in private. And I'm like, yeah. What are you talking about in private that you can't say on Instagram?
Yeah, all of that is also, I mean, I understand it. I'm not, like, canceling Zhenya and Alina, because Lord knows I like both of them. I just think it's both. I think there is no way to be on camera physically cheering this situation on without making yourself so available to be twisted as a part of, like, the charade that's being put on.
They had the ISU needs reform banner. I feel like that would have.
Yeah, if they were, or there is many ways this could have been done. And I appreciate them being there for the girls. And I appreciate, you know, the chaperoning on an airplane and all of that. It's just so easy to twist this so that just a normal onlooker can be like, well, you know, those girls who like claim they were so terribly treated when they were younger, they were there and like clapping, you know, like it's so easy.
Well, yeah, not only that, but like it just wouldn't it have just been cleaner and easier if like we got to keep the Zhenya that was like in Canada talking about how Russia was like mailing her weird pills and then yelling at her when she didn't take them and like talking about her like eating disorders and all this stuff. People are complex and whatever, but that to me felt like
growing up in a terrible system makes it very hard to unlearn. And
yeah, it's not a straight line, but it's hard to do that and then go back and be even adjacent to it in any way. We can all be like, I would never do that. Like, we don't know what we would do if we were her, but it's tough.
Yeah, I think it boils down to it's tough, and it's tough on so many people. I have really my final conclusion. I'm sure this is going to keep popping up, and I'm sure we're not done talking about this. And that's actually my conclusion is, please don't be done talking about this. If you've gotten this far into listening to us, if you've been talking or like reading about this on the internet, like don't let this die out, because so many people in positions of power are going to try to bury this. And we're already seeing posts of the girls back on the ice. We're already seeing the pushback of, well, you know, we're going to have a hearing at some point about some shit. Don't let this be done just because the Olympics are allegedly over, even though we didn't see the closing ceremony ourselves personally. Please, I know as a person with like 600 followers on Twitter that it can feel so insignificant when you're screaming into the void. Please don't stop screaming into the void. At some point, when the fucking chips are down, people will know that there has been a void and people have been screaming into it. And it's gonna make more sense if there has been more of us. And fucking at the ISU, every fucking time they post a graphic like, wow, wasn't the Olympics amazing? I'm not advocating for making a social media intern's life hell, but if that's what it takes, honestly, fucking just don't stop.
Yeah, and I think that there's pressure, obviously, like you said, from the powers that be. And I think there's also this sort of social pressure that, like, as scandals kind of go further and further into the rearview mirror, there's this social pressure to, like, stop being so negative and focus on the positive. And, like, we finally, like, maybe next season, it's like, we finally have a new season. We can leave that hell season behind and we can enjoy things. And it's like, yes, by all means, enjoy things, but, like, don't forget about it. Do both. Continue doing both.
Hey, I think figure skating fandom, hi, I love you so much. You're so fucking good at holding grudges and making up discourse. For once in your fucking life, do that about an important thing.
And there it is. I think that every second of footage or performance or anything that we see from any of Atari's students is a minute in time that Atari was on the payroll and making bank on abuse.
And there it is.
That's it. Can we talk about other infuriating discourse now?
Yes. Yes. If you're comparing any of this shit that we just spent an hour and 6 minutes talking about to anything that's happening in the men's field, and I'm not saying that there is not overscoring and like whatever the fuck, if you're comparing any of that, fucking be ashamed of yourself and like go work for a charity or something. Like go to a soup kitchen and help for an hour. Like that's all I have to say about that is it's truly embarrassing and infuriating that people can be like, I mean, you've heard the discourse. I can't bring myself to quote any of it, even fucking ironically, because it's insane.
It's just fan news being mad. Like,
yeah, fucking die mad. Fucking die mad. At this point, I'm the fact that appreciating the career of inarguably by any account, by anyone, including the current Olympic gold medalist Nathan Chen Hey, the greatest of all time, the fact that you can't fucking appreciate this person without having to be like, you know, I'm not one of those people, but is you've ruined this for everyone at this point. Like, the fact that Yuzu's career and everything he's achieved and everything he continues to achieve and his beautiful artistry and blah, 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 blah is so fucking undeniable, and I, as a normal, relatively normal person on the internet, feel the need to be like, I appreciate this man, but I'm not one of his capital F fans. I hope every single one of you is very deeply ashamed.
I have witnessed this in many fandoms, not just skating, particularly K-pop, actually. But this weird thing of, like, infantilizing grown men. Because
hey, what is the connection between those two fandoms,
quick? I'm just not really sure. I wonder what the similarity is between that. I wonder. You know, in case you're not picking up what we're putting down here, it's like, hey, I see, like, a cute, pretty, androgynous Asian man. Let me completely emasculate him by pretending I need to fight all his battles for him. There's a long history, and it's not the first time I've talked about this, but there's a long history in the West, in America in particular, of, like, the calculated emasculinization of, like, Asian or Asian American men, like, in the popular view for, like, various reasons. Like, oh no, they're gonna steal our white wives because they're hot and they're working on these railroads shirtless and sweaty, etc. So, like, it's just a whole thing. And, like,
again, I'm laughing because I'm deeply uncomfortable. I'm not finding the raging racism of everyone funny.
There's not a part of you that finds, like, a shirtless, sweaty railroad worker anything other than deeply uncomfortable?
Well, no, I, as a person, regardless of the race and gender of said worker, am interested in what they have to say to me, but I'm also terrified of the takes that we're doing here.
Yeah, anyway, I just don't like it. It's this weird thing of, like, I'm sorry, but, like, if I was famous and and anything happened, like someone said something about me or somebody didn't say something about me, whatever it is that fans make up to be offended about. And I woke up and the first I heard about it was like a bajillion people that you will never
hashtag,
meet.
Hashtag, which is like, stay strong, Megan.
They've decided that they are going to fight this battle for you before you've even weighed in on whether you're offended. I cannot describe the amount of embarrassment I feel even just imagining that. What are you trying to achieve? Do you think that they're feeling supported? Do you think that they're sitting home like hugging a pillow and being like, I'm so loved. I'm so happy that I, Yuzuru Hanyu, don't have to have a conversation with my best friend, Javier Fernandez. About a thing he said because all these fucking like women in like rural Maine are like on their little keyboards like nah, 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 nah. Like oh my god, I would be so embarrassed.
I would be the thing is, Megan, I'm a terrible person, and if that happened to me, I would be on Twitter like, yeah, for the record, I'm very fucking pissed at my best friend Megan because she said this and this and this, and she hasn't posted a no-tap apology about it yet. And even though we did talk for 5 hours just now, I'm still very upset. And please at, I don't know what my fans' names would be, but like, please just at my best friend. The netheads, please, netheads, just bully my best friend relentlessly, please, 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 because I'm only 28 years old and I'm incapable of using my words with my close friends who are my friends in real life.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. And like that particular situation also kind of drove me nuts because
hey, the Javi situation. Can I say real quick something about the Javi situation?
Yeah, you can.
No, you can say something smart first.
What I wanted to say is that like literally everybody knows that they're infamously like the two closest dudes in male figure skating over the past like 10 years or so. And so I think that if one of them says, oh, it looks like he fucked up and they used to be training mates and they used to infamously like spur each other on and inspire each other to compete more, could it enter your fucking brain for 1 second that maybe in a friendly training mate way, this is how they speak to each other in private, and you have to consider where it comes from, and it's not the same as like somebody who like demonstrably hates Yuzuru Hanyu saying it. Like, please just like think about context for 1 second. Why would Javier Fernandez just decide to diss his friend on TV? Like, is it possible that you've read it wrong, stranger who doesn't know either of them?
This is the smart take. My take is, if you're upset about anything that has to do with Yuzu and Javi and the lack or no or appearance thereof of any holes, fucking go write about it. We all know you're doing it anyway. If you want to talk about the fucking conversation you want them to be having, Twitter is not your platform, honey.
Yeah, I've heard there are places online where people write fiction, who fans who write fiction.
And there's a lot of holes in there that you can talk about at fucking length.
And fucking length that you can talk about at length.
The length and the depth at which you can talk about how people feel about each other's holes. Not on Twitter, though.
Not on Twitter. It's annoying.
I've shown my ass so aggressively in the past fine. 5 minutes.
It's fine.
People, we all knew. Know. It's fine.
It's not... It's, you can sense it. Like, people can sense their own. You know what I mean? I think...
I'm just saying, y'all can do fucking better.
Just Google it. See what happens. See if your life is a little different after that. I also want to say... tangentially explore this concept of, like...
Holes? Are we tangentially exploring each other's...
No, I'm sorry. I mean, yes, always. But I was going to say, like, Asian masculinity, which is different.
I'm so sorry I've derailed this. I've derailed this so aggressively in such a terrible way. Conversely, that's a part of the problem, somehow.
Yeah, somehow. So, okay. Here's the thing that I so desperately wish that people who hate Nathan Chen could do is, like, here's something I actually, like, really suggest they all do. I don't know if any of you are listening. If you are,
seek,
like,
therapy.
Like, no. Okay, sure. But, like, if that's not available to you, like, look in the mirror and practice saying the following. It's okay if I don't like something. It's okay.
It's okay if I don't like something.
It's okay if I don't like something. You don't have to come up with a reason that it is morally justifiable for you to not like it. You can just have taste. Even in, yes. Like, can we tell you, as two people who spent 2 years of our lives continuously 24/7, like, with very little sleep, just having these fucking, like, head up our ass, navel-gazy conversations with other artists about, like, what is art and what is taste? Like, we all agree that there is no arguing with taste. There is, like, you can say, like, I like this thing, and no one can say, no, you don't. That is an unimpeachable statement. I like this or I don't like this. You don't have to defend it. You don't have to give reasons. If anybody makes you feel like you're wrong for that, you need to examine, like, how much you value other people's opinions of your opinions and maybe go outside and, like, get out of your own head, you know? And I say that as someone who's been there. Like, you need to get out of your own head. It's not, you don't need to defend why you like things. Nobody is going to make you, ever.
And there you have it. And I'm going to expand on that just a little bit. And then I think I'm going to be done. What I want to say is, first of all, it's okay to dislike things. It's okay to dislike things that many people like. What's not okay is trying to, as Megan was saying, justify that by pretend coming up with morally terrible, repugnant reasons that the thing that you don't like is bad. There are queer people dying every fucking day. There's trans children being put in danger by insane, terrible people who want to take them away from their families because taking care of your trans child is seen as child abuse. There's fucking... The life expectancy of a black trans woman is 32 years old in the U.S., and that's just because the U.S. keeps some sort of statistic. We don't even know what it is in other countries. There are 70-plus countries in the world where being queer is fucking legal. And you're gonna sit here and fucking appropriate queer rights language to talk about why you don't like a figure skater? Fucking... Donate to a charity, and I mean your time and whatever brain cells you have left and all of your money, because it's so fucking offensive to me as a queer person to be hearing y'all pretend that any of this is about, like, how Nathan appears to be too heterosexual or whatever for your fucking liking. First of all, our fucking sport is not at a level where you can pretend that being queer is at an advantage for anyone in the sport. And secondly, there's so much fucking wrong in the fucking world. It's not your favorite fucking figure skater not winning a fucking medal. Like, do better. And if you're appropriating the language of queer rights and queer struggle to be justifying any of this, I hope you know that fucking Yuzuru Hanyu and anyone involved with that is fucking ashamed of you. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. That was incredibly powerful. Here's what I want to say, which is going to be less powerful. Is more of a list of opinions.
Go for it.
One, you are making ever so many assumptions when you say things like oh, well, Nathan skates like a straight guy, or Nathan won because he's, you know, it's like anytime you talk about the sexuality, I don't honestly, like, maybe this is an unpopular opinion. I don't actually even trust celebrities when they flat out say what sexuality they are, because they lie all the time, as does non-celebrities. Everybody lies all the time.
Because I don't think even in very, even in the circles where you think that being queer is fine in like A-list Hollywood or like expensive big athletes, even there, being queer to this day is not just like, you don't always get the fucking like gender ambiguous Harry Styles, is he or is he not? Oh my God, we love him. Yes, queen treatment.
Yeah, and I think like the whole thing of like, just for example, like the smallest micro example of like Nathan being on that talk show doing a little duck walk or something because he was in like a dancing mini game and somebody asked him to vote.
Sure.
And then now there's all this discourse of like, is it homophobic because he's straight, or what if he's not? And then it was like iconic. And I'm
for
like,
$1, name a fucking ballroom dancer.
Also, yeah, no shit. Not only that, but from where I'm sitting, it's like, you remember that whole thing a few years ago where like Isabel Fall, who wrote that story about like that people interpreted as transphobic, but then Isabel had to like out herself as transgender in order to be like, no, I'm allowed to say this.
I'm writing happened about my fucking experience. Yes.
Yeah. There have been so many examples of that. Like, I think the woman who wrote Love, Simon had to come out as bi in order to defend the fact that she was writing a queer story and she didn't want to. Like, that happens so frequently. And like, I think it's really ugly to put people in situations where they have to justify doing or saying certain things because you knowing a private fact about a stranger and is really important to you to be able to make judgments on that stranger. Like, it's just really bizarre to me.
It boils down to fetishization as well. Like, you either want people to be the bad guys in your whatever narrative you're building and you're using the easiest buzzwords you've heard on the internet, or you want it to be easy for you to fetishize them because, yes, queen, pop off the house down boots, whatever. And if that made no sense for you, congrats, you're straight.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, you can make fun of straight people and it's funny. Like, I think it's hilarious and liberating and all that stuff. So like, if it's just a throwaway joke of like, XYZ person skates like a straight guy or whatever, but like in the context of the larger discourse, which there always is, it sucks because you don't know who's straight. I'm sorry, like have none of those people ever met somebody who seemed really straight and then came out? Because I've known a lot of those people. And like,
also, hey, the concept that there is a way that you can be non-straight just in the world is inherently homophobic. You're inherently assuming that there is only one way to be quote-unquote correctly queer, and that regardless of where you're coming from, honey, it's bad.
That and the seeming of it all, the gaydar of it all. And here, I want to acknowledge this because this is the thing that people are now dredging up, is that Nathan interview from like last summer where, if I remember correctly, there was like a leading question to him about what's it like being like more masculine or straight or something in like a gay dominated sport or a homosexual dominated sport. And what I remember is, I believe that the response Nathan gave was like shitty, but I believe that the parts of it that made it shitty were him either repeating back language that was fed to him in the question, or like, I kind of thought what he was trying to say was speaking to the perception that figure skating is a very feminine slash gay thing to do, which is like, yeah, everybody thinks that. We've talked about it. I don't think it's fair to say like Nathan is a homophobe and he's bad, because it's taking away the agency from queer people to be able to make a character judgment. Because how frequently is it that it's like, there's somebody who says a shitty thing and then another person who says a shitty thing, and you're making this value judgment of like, well, the previous person is the head of the Young Republicans Club and the other person is just like a jock guy who's been really cool to me my whole life, but maybe just doesn't know. And then you correct him and he apologizes. Like, those are two different things. And if you're taking away a queer person's ability to navigate through that, it's like you're basically telling them like, your opinions don't matter. I'm telling you what's correct. And that's not fair.
Yeah, fucking stop learning buzzwords on Twitter and use your judgment. And maybe instead of learning just like whatever words are going to make you sound very hip and cool at your local GSA, learn some fucking nuance.
Like, do you think Adam Rippon would hang out with Nathan if he was
known homophobe Nathan Chen?
Do you think that Jason Brown would hang? You know what I mean? Like, do you think that Timothy LeDuc? Like, I just like, you have to look at context clues. Just this clues. Nice who are collection. People friends with? Like,
this nice collection of outspoken queer advocates and their bestie, a known violent homophobe. It makes no sense, besties. Like, Jesus.
And it bothers me because it takes away the idea that you can forgive someone for making a mistake, which is obviously a much larger conversation in what ultimately gets sort of rebranded as cancel culture and then turned into a scare tactic. But what the nugget of truth in there is that I think it's really unfair to not allow someone to apologize for a mistake. Like, you know, you can extrapolate that to like, oh, okay, so then like we can't rehabilitate criminals. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people need to be allowed to.
But yeah, exactly. Can.
No, that's what I'm saying. We can.
Unless they're a Terry Tutberidze, in which case put her in a fucking cave for the rest of her life. There is no rehabilitation there.
Okay, yes, but also in all sincerity and seriousness. No, I'm serious. If a Terry like took like 20 or 30 years being punished for this, came back as like a Tatiana Tarasova old lady and was like, everything I have done is wrong. I deserve to be hated in the nation and I'm donating my entire fortune to like kids with eating disorders to recover. Like, I would be like, okay, cool, pop off, Terry. Like, it doesn't negate what you did, but like, I can recognize that you're not the same person you used to be.
Yeah, but I would still not fucking throw her a fucking parade, you know?
No, of course, but I'm not saying that we throw Nathan a parade either. I'm saying that we recognize that he's a person.
Unless it's Pride, hey.
Hey. No, but he's a person. He said something dumb and then he immediately went online in a way that he usually doesn't, because like he's not very present on Twitter. And if you go on his Twitter to this day, the top thing is still that apology from last summer. He says this was stupid and these are all the reasons it was stupid and it was all correct. And then like it's as though that didn't happen. And it's like, so we're saying you can't apologize now. Like, here's the example that I would compare it to would be like how we like dunk on Vincent Joe a little bit, who, by the way, did not deserve to have to miss the whole Olympics regardless
of
who he is
as
a person. God bless him. That's fucking horrible. But like, we dunk on him because he liked some tweets that were transphobic back in the day. And then he never said anything else to make us believe that he's changed his mind. And if he did, in a second, I would be like, oh, my God, he's son. He's adorable. We love
Vincent
him.
Vincent, say trans rights challenge 2022.
Okay. And sidebar, I actually think that it kind of one of these like very tangential negative effects of him not being able to be out and about during the Olympics was that he was kind of robbed of the opportunity to be seen cavorting with Adam Rippon and Timothy LeDuc, as we said. That would have been so good for his image, and yet he was just stuck in a hotel room. So, like, that's, you know, we could have maybe also had a Vincent redemption arc, but, like, alas, whatever. But back to the point, if somebody apologizes in a heartfelt way, can you please, like, fucking listen and use your brain and your gut and not just decide that they're an evil person because they won over someone you like?
Yeah. Also, hi, the coaches of the current Olympic medalists in the team event and Olympic silver medalists in ice dance is Alexander Julin, who very much has on record and continuously called trans people freaks and weirdos and persons who don't have a place in his sport or just in the world in general. I feel like there's a lot of shitty people in positions of power in our sport who deserve your learned righteous anger about the discrimination that queer people face in the sport and in the world. Spoilers, it's not Nathan.
Yeah, like, we know what it would look like if somebody really wanted to go on television and talk shit about Jason Brown not being a man, and it looks like Alexia Gooden. So, like,
well,
it's not...
Well, there you have it.
And I think the thing that annoyed me the most that I would like to close with is I saw this Twitter thread that I want to acknowledge was coming from a really good place, and we're all on the same team of trying to eradicate these ideas of, like, homophobia in the sport and in general. But it was basically, like, the reason that we can't accept Nathan's apology is because he's the next in a long line of, like, male skaters who have done and said homophobic things. And I think it's really dangerous to say that by forgiving Nathan, you're effectively saying that homophobia in the sport doesn't exist. Like, that's an insane claim to make. Like, I think that it's...
As long as Alexander Julin gets to be at the boards at the fucking Olympics, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying that, like, when Elvis Stoiko said it, it was okay. I'm saying that I don't think Nathan said the same level of thing. And by lumping him in, we're actually trivializing the legacy of homophobia in the sport. Like, thank you.
You're also discounting years and years and years of queer activism sacrificed by out queer athletes and just, like, general
activism in the world, because I'm sorry, but like, context exists. There's conversations that have to be had in the 60s, and there's conversations that have to be had 5 years ago, and then there's conversations that have to be had now. And it's just kind of shitty to, again, learn some fucking nuance. My fucking God.
Well, that's the umbrella, like, overarching thing of this entire episode for me, is like the complete, like, context erasure, completely like forgetting who anybody is, where they come from, and who they're friends with and who they're not friends with, and what's the history of their country, and like all this stuff. I think it's like this total collapse of context, and I don't blame individual fans, because the Olympics is by definition sort of taken out of context, and you're only given the information you're given by the commentators, and who the fuck knows who's paying them, you know? So yeah. I get it, but like, it behooves everybody to remember that everybody involved is a human person with a life. And hey, that's what we've been saying since day one.
Yeah, because we know a lot of people are new to the sport and have stumbled their way into this mess. I'm not saying anyone on the internet has any individual responsibility, but there is also the thing of like, fan spaces do have the ability to build narratives. And if a lot of people stumble into the sport new and are like, oh my God, I like the weirdo with the fucking backpack t-shirt who won, and they're met with, well, actually, he's really bad and here's why, a thread, you're building an incorrect narrative and an incomplete narrative for just others who are in the same spot as you. We don't have the support of a federation or a media or anything. And it should be the responsibility of shared equal ground community spaces to be fucking smarter. I think I'm taking us out. Should I take us out?
Yeah, I think that my call to action for people would just be sort of like, be like mindful of like how you are on Twitter. Like, if you just want to say a tweet and you have like 2 followers and like no one's ever going to see it, then like, yeah, if I then go, oh, well, fuck you, as like a person with a bigger platform, that's on me. Like, I just should mute you and move on. But if you're like having a shitty take as a reply to like a famous person saying something, like, you did that on purpose to be seen. Yeah. So like, you need to be careful of what you say, because people will see it. And a lot of new people are coming into the sport. And at this time, like post Olympics, we're going to get an influx of new fans. And it's kind of on us, the like previous fans, like the older fans, to welcome them and like help them understand what can be really good about the sport, and not gatekeep them and treat them badly and turn them into the Joker.
Yeah, the only Joker that deserves to exist is Josephine Teligard.
Amen.
That's going to be a conversation for next episode. Hey, if you've gotten this far into this, thank you so much for listening. We're usually funnier than this and way less bitter, but sometimes things need to be said. Also, if you're new here, thank you so much and hello, and we're happy to have you. Also, so many of you make this possible for us, and if you're just joining us, we have a Patreon, and that Patreon keeps the lights on in our metaphorical studio. It also helps us support people and causes that need it. And I personally know that after this fucking episode, we're going to be tossing some cash to some queer charity that deserves it at the very least. And you can support us and support people that and causes that we find important over at patreon.com/icedpod. Megan, do you want to hit me with the ever-growing, just amazing, doubled in size recently list of people who are in our corner?
Yeah, you guys, this list is really long now. I might speed it up in post. It's, I mean, like, it's a really champagne problem to have that our list of patrons is so long.
No, don't. But Let them live. Let them live in the glory of their names. Okay, and well, everyone fucking raise a glass to
Josiah, Sabrina, Annie, Carissa, Magical Zebra in Winter, Melanie, Linnea, Gina, Maddie Skizistan, Yana, Alina, Kenneth, Rob, Catherine, Margaret, Lindsay, Marjorie, Jimmy, Natalie, Robert, Kate, Skating Scores, Vox Machina, Adela, Greta, Tryhard Radio, Samantha, Jesse, Kieran, Mary, Jana, Barbara, another Barbara, Sunny, Erin, Aura, Sally, Samira, Joe, KM, and Spirit, I am always throwing plushies at Evgenia Medvedeva, Jennifer, Keith, Jules, Danny, and Jordan.
You're fucking incredible, and thank you so very much. Also, if you're here and you're supporting us in any way, you're also incredible.
You can find us on the internet if you want to tell us that you enjoyed or hated any of our takes. Megan, where are you on the internet?
So if you hated any of my takes, I'm nowhere. I don't exist. If you liked them, I'm at Megan Kelleher 3 on Twitter. Where are you, Netta?
I'm at Netta Marie. That's N-E-D-A. And then just Marie on Twitter and Instagram. And you're fucking welcome. I'll be so kind to you. And also you can find both of us over at Iced Tea Pod on Twitter. And like I said, Patreon. Also, we have a Buy Me a Coffee where you can give us a one-time tip. That's buymeacoff.ee/icedteapod. First of all, we're going to talk about the Olympics some more and it's going to be fun. Secondly, Worlds is in like a month. So we're not done here.
This is not technically our first Olympics episode because we were recording in our hotel room studio and putting those episodes up on Patreon. So if you want even more Olympics tea, that is just like a total 180 shift in tone. To give you an idea, one of them episodes is called Give Bing Duan Duan a Gun. Like it's a lot of fun, a lot of unhinged jet lagged lunacy. Check those out if you want. And yeah, our next episode is going to be us talking about everything that we fucking loved to see at the Olympics.
We love to see it, folks, so much. And God, thank you so much. It's the Olympics has been a fucking ride. And I'm personally very grateful that you all have joined us for it.
Thank you guys so much for being there the whole journey. And we will talk to you some more. See ya.
Stay safe. Love you. Bye.